This weekend, it's going to be all about the Lone Star State attending games Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Catches work for USA Today, covering college football online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, always appreciate you getting us started. Are we ready to dive into college football season?
I've been ready for a long, long time.
Okay, that would qualify for today. I want to commence with what you posted Friday, the playoff focus piece. I thought USC coach Clay Helton put it well. You got to build the resume. And, of course, we went from BCS champ Florida State to the first playoff in 2014. It's year three. I'm not usually big on blanket statements, but when you think about having teams who play for the title now doubled, the pressure on the coaches, has it increased substantially? Just a little more, or does it depend on the school?
Well, that's a good question, Steve. You know, unlike all the other ones you asked, right? But and I'm kidding. But
thank you.
I think it's pretty much. Let me put it this way: I think there's probably 18 to 20 schools where the fan bases think they have a legitimate shot to be in the playoff. There's about 12 schools, maybe, and they probably and look, when I say that, it's not a hard and fast thing. 12 and maybe the bottom two rotate in and out type of thing that think that their school should be in the playoff every year. And there's five or six that have a legitimate shot just about every year. And so I think for those pools, the 12 and maybe even up to 18 to 20, the pressure has ratcheted up tremendously on coaches with the playoff, because with the move to a selection committee and the doubling of the slots from two to four from the BCS to the college football playoff, people are like, well, there's more room to get in. We should be in there, we meaning our favorite team. And when you don't get there, whether you coulda, woulda, shoulda in reality or not, you know, the perception is, why didn't you? And you should have. And so I do think the pressure has gotten bigger, especially when you combine that with the fact that these coaches are making so much more money now than they did 5 years ago, even. You know, the SEC West, every single coach makes more than $4 million a year.
Wow.
And look, that's seven schools, and we all know how much the SEC West thinks of itself, but they can't all win. And so that's why you look at Les Miles and you look at Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M and Gus Miles on at Auburn, and you see that their fan bases are a little bit restless, and if things don't go well for them, they may be done this year, because the pressure has ratcheted up tremendously. Now, there's another factor there, and the factor with the SEC West, especially when it comes to Auburn and LSU, is Nick Saban. But there's no question that I think the advent of the college football playoff, long answer to your very short but very good question, has ratcheted things up tremendously on a significant minority of coaches.
By the way, you said they all made $4 million a year, because
$4 million plus, yeah. I mean, everybody, all seven head coaches in the SEC West make at least $4 million a year, led, of course, by Nick Saban, who's, I don't have his numbers for this year, he's up around nine. But, yeah.
Wow, because I remember an article, it may have been in Sports Illustrated, where there was concern about the direction and the college football values when Paterno and Bowden each made $500,000 a year.
Do you remember when Jackie Sherrill was at Texas A&M and he made $200,000 and people were gasping about that? Now, that's going to reveal our age. I was a Cub reporter of 3 years old at that time. But actually, that was when I was in – it actually truly was when I was in a grade schooler, truly. But I remember that. And you know, but look, just 15 years ago, the idea that these guys would make $1 million a year or $2 million a year was an unbelievable thing. And now that it's really, you know, everybody makes that. You've got coordinators that make almost $2 million a year.
Yeah, Helf, just, what's it, $3.5 million a year. And he wasn't even a head coach till 3 years ago. Unbelievable.
True,
staggering.
But they got him on the discount to start with, because right, he got the promotion from offensive coordinator, and he got his raise, and deservedly so, when he took the Ducks to the title game. So, I mean, you know, that's – he is – look, and obviously everybody wants Mark Helfrich to do well and the Ducks to do well. But by comparison to his peers, he's a real bargain.
No, that's an interesting point. And more importantly, you and I should be making $3.5 million a year. I'm willing to be flexible on what my duties are.
Well, yeah, I mean, I only make $3.2.
Okay.
And that's $3.2 a year. So.
Well, hopefully you'll hit your incentives.
$3.2, not million.
I got you. So I was thinking, I really can't imagine we'll ever see four unbeaten teams in the playoff four. So while there might be more heat on coaches perceived to have contending teams, could we say that now you lose a tough out-of-conference game in September? And by the way, we've got some beauties this month. But because it's early and strength of schedule matters, you know, those losses are not really viewed as fatal anymore.
No, they're not, and that's a direct result of A, the doubling of the access from two teams to four to play for the national title, but also the selection committee, where it's not just pollsters and a set of computer rankings, the old BCS formula. It's this selection committee, at least in our limited data set from the first 2 years, places a huge premium on playing a tough strength of schedule and will give you, you know, will overlook losses early. Now, I know they would say they consider the whole body of work, and they may not, you know, ding you too much for a loss late, but it's human nature that you're going to need some time to rehab the loss. But if you take one in September, out of conference, in conference, whatever, it's not necessarily fatal. I mean, Alabama has taken losses to Ole Miss in each of the last 2 years in September. They play them again on September 17th, and were they to lose that SEC game, they'd still be in the race, you know?
Yep.
If Ole Miss loses to Florida State but runs the table, you know, they're going to be fine.
Absolutely.
Not going to be an issue at all. If Ohio State loses to Oklahoma or Oklahoma loses to Ohio State on September 17th, either of those two could be back in the mix by late November.
I want to actually talk about the Sooners because you'll be there. What a backfield coming back. Baker Mayfield, Sammy Perine, who likely becomes the all-time leading rusher at that school. You know, you're talking Billy Sims, Steve Owens, who won a Heisman, Adrian Peterson, Joe Washington. But your story today about him, it seems like he's not getting the attention of Fournette, McCaffrey, the kid from Florida, Cook, or maybe even Royce Freeman. You wrote a piece about him. What could you tell us about this young guy? Maybe silent assassin is appropriate?
Yeah, and I've had people compare him a little bit to Royce Freeman. They're a little bit similar in their running style to kind of give you know, the Eugene listeners kind of a comparison, but they are different. There's no question they're different, and that's a very imperfect comparison. So, look, I think he's a fantastic running back, and I think a lot of NFL scouts do too. What's interesting is he's kind of run on a bum wheel for most of the last 2 years, and especially late last season. He underwent surgery on his left ankle, repaired a couple of ligaments. They think he'll be better than ever. So he's got, you know, 3,000-plus yards in two seasons. If he has a 1,000-yard rushing, you know, I think it's 1,057, he passes Billy Sims, Joe Washington, Adrian Peterson, and several others, and moves into first place on the Oklahoma all-time record list. You know, he's currently in 10th place, but with 1,056, he'll be in first place, or 1,057, I guess. And, you know, that's pretty high company. Nobody's trying to say he'll be the best of those, and there's a whole lot of differences in statistics, including the fact that offenses, you know, they play more plays, they play more games, everything else. On the other hand, Oklahoma used to have those halfbacks in the wishbone that would share carries with not two backs would share carries, but three, because the fullback got the ball a lot of times.
Yep.
And so did the quarterback. But they also pass the ball a whole lot more now in Oklahoma's offense. And he shared carries with another back, Joe Mixon, last year. So, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to put him in the upper echelon, you know, of all those Oklahoma backs, but he's really, really good. And he definitely belongs in the conversation, along with Royce Freeman, who also gets overlooked, with the Leonard Fournettes and the Dalvin Cooks and the Christian McCaffreys. And I'm sure I'm missing somebody else here of the world when we talk about this year's big-time running backs.
Yeah, we were talking about the kind of the changing of the guard in particular, that conference. We went back to Barry Switzer's championship team 1985, 30 years ago. Between Jamel Holloway and Troy Aikman, they had 100 forward passes. It was, it's just a different game. Absolutely fantastic. Talking with George Schroeder, I'm really looking forward to the game you're going to see, Houston and Oklahoma. Sooners, I'd say the Big 12 favorite. Houston, the team, feels some have a shot to make the playoffs as a non-Power 5. And earlier we were talking about no fatal losses early if you're a Power 5. But can we make an exception here if the Cougs actually want that slim shot at the playoffs? This actually falls into you got to win this one?
Well, they all fall into you got to win this one for Houston. I mean, if you're a Group of Five school, first of all, you have to have street cred built up from previous years. And I know everybody says it's all about this year, but it's not. You've got to have some street cred built up if you're a Power Five school. They've got that from going 13-1 last year, beating Florida State in the Peach Bowl, bringing back the bulk of this team. And now if you've got to beat Oklahoma, yes, because otherwise it doesn't matter. If you beat Oklahoma, you run the table in the American, which is, you know, a lot easier said than actually done.
Right.
And then you beat a Louisville team that's got every shot to be in the top 25 on a Thursday night in November, and you finish, you know, unbeaten, then you've got an interesting argument if you're Houston for a slot from the Group of Five. And that takes a little bit of chaos. You probably need that Pac-12 champion with two losses. You probably would love for Oklahoma to win the Big 12, maybe take another loss to make it easier, but to win the Big 12, so you could say, hey, we beat the Big 12 champ. But they have to win them all, or we're not even going to be talking about this. So, yeah, they have to beat Oklahoma, and it'd be the biggest win probably, at least for right now, in school history. The other thing that's a piece of the background with Oklahoma-Houston is the whole will or won't the Big 12 expand. And, you know, I don't think that one game's outcome is going to matter a whit. But don't try telling that to the Cougar faithful. They think it's a big deal, and it might help them in their bid to get into the Big 12.
Let's talk about your Sunday destination, Notre Dame in Texas. Man, third year for Charlie Strong. First two seasons, losing years. A lot of people have them as a team on the rise. They got the new offensive coordinator, Sterling Gilbert, in from Tulsa with a great rep. I guess Strong said when a guy goes out under center, be it Shane Buechele or Ty Swoops, we'll know who's the starter. But what do you say, at the least, does he have to accomplish down there at UT to avoid people calling for his head all winter and spring?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, they can't have a losing record. But, you know, I don't think that a 6-6 then go win a bowl game, you know, be 7-6 is going to be enough either. I think they're going to have to win 8 or 9 games, and they need to not get embarrassed. They had some games that were embarrassing. Now, they beat, what's interesting is the two best teams they played, they beat. They beat Oklahoma, and they beat Baylor. Now, Baylor was down to, you know, basically playing you and me at quarterback at the time.
Right.
But I mean, that's still a really good win for Texas. But they had some embarrassments. Like, they were embarrassed in getting shut out at Iowa State. Some things like that. TCU, you know, just ran it up and down the field on them. They can't afford those either. So it's not just about numbers of victories. It is that, but it's also, are you showing demonstrable progress, and are you not getting embarrassed? And can we point to 2017 as a year when you're going to be like back? And I think that so you know, there's a little bit of intangible vibe that's going to be with that, and so that's going to start with how are they going to play at quarterback. I mean, it all cycles back to that with Texas. How are they going to be at quarterback? We don't know if Shane Buechele, the true freshman, is going to start, or if Tyrone Swoops is going to start against Notre Dame on Sunday. We don't know how either will play, but we do know that it feels pretty consequential which one starts and how he plays.
The opener that you'll be at is in Waco, Baylor, Northwestern State. Obviously, we know the scandal story about Baylor. We've talked about it right here. But as far as the football team they're putting on the field with Seth Russell back at quarterback, Johnny Jefferson, one of their stud backs, got hurt in a car accident, but they've got another 1,300-yard guy. There was the suspension of the football player for abusing a dog. With their skill, they don't really need a lockdown defense. What do you make of this team and their capability?
Well, even had they brought back everything and there'd been no scandal and Art Briles was still there, and I would say that they were going to take a half step back this year because they lost some significant contributors along both lines from last year.
Right.
And I think there was a time in last year when they had a shot to be the best team in the country before Seth Russell got injured. And then, you know, they were slightly different then, and then they started quarterbacks drop like flies at that point. This year, I wouldn't have said that. I think Oklahoma and TCU are your two favorites. Baylor would have been sort of bumping up there with a shot to win the Big 12. But that's all tangible stuff. I mean, I think the intangibles with Baylor are the biggest question mark with this team. And frankly, I don't know that I would describe them as positives at this point, you know, as we're, you know, a couple days away from kickoff. I think, Steve, you have to look at it and go, it's really hard to see those guys winning a ton of games that they would have won with Art Briles. And it's not that Jim Grove's not a good coach. It's not that he's not meshing well with that, complete Art Briles staff that for some reason is still there. But it's just a weird mix of things when that kind of stuff happens. And by the way, I don't know that we do know if he's going to mix well with that staff. And, the only real parallel we have in recent memory to how things played out on a football field after a situation like this is Arkansas after Bobby Petrino got fired in April. Remember, he took that April Fool's ride, and you can use the pun if you want, on that motorcycle and wrecked it, and everything went awry from there, and he got fired. They hired John L. Smith. Now, and maybe Jim Grove, you might argue, is a better coach than John L. Smith. I'm not going to argue with you about that, but they kept the exact same rest of the staff pretty much, and they were supposed to have a really good team. They were coming off the Sugar Bowl. They thought they were going to contend for the SEC West. And I think talent-wise, they probably had that kind of team, and they just cratered. And I think that's the potential that you have to watch out for with Baylor, is that, they could crater because this is a whole lot more about intangibles than it is about sort of who's actually returning on your depth chart.
Yeah, that Arkansas team went from the Sugar Bowl to four wins. And by
right.
the way, just
and look, I think it's more likely Baylor goes to 8 wins and goes 8-4 or 7-5 or something like that, and it's still a pretty successful season. I'm not forecasting 4-8, but you know, based on what you thought they might do, had nothing happened, that would still be a pretty significant come down.
Yeah, and of course, in league, they have to play at Texas, at Oklahoma, and at TCU, which is not really a day at the beach. Well, you certainly have the weekend trifecta, Oklahoma to Waco, then Houston, then Austin. So travel safe, a lot of good stuff. Enjoy the games. Follow him on Twitter, at George Schroeder. It's go time. Always appreciate the time, George. Talk next
All right,
Wednesday.
Man. Take care, Steve. Yeah. I look forward to it, and we'll talk some football next week.
You got it. Take it easy.